Hello everyone, I'm Master Sergeant Shane Hughes, and you're listening to Beyond the Horizon, a podcast produced by the Ohio Air National Guard's 178th Wing in Springfield, Ohio. Joining us today is Lieutenant Colonel Andy Powers, the commander of the 178th Wing's Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Group. Today, we discussed his military career, his role as the ISRG commander, and his philosophy on leadership. I hope you enjoy the show. Sir, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you would, go ahead and start off just by telling me a little bit about yourself. You know, what inspired you to enlist, and how did that lead you to where you are today?
Sure. You know, I grew up exposed to the Ohio National Guard from an early age. My father was in for, I think, 36 years when he retired. So I had a lot of initial exposure as a young child to the Ohio Air National Guard. It's just one of those things where I just knew it was something I wanted to do. And that's what led to my enlistment. You know, once I was a member, you know, the Guard family, the communities that we support, and the missions that we executed are what really drove me to stay in, you know, beyond initial enlistment and leveraging some of the benefits to making it a lifelong career as well, and kind of making it, you know, my life's dedication. You know, it's just the Ohio National Guard and the Air National Guard writ large are just wonderful, amazing organizations that have benefited me tremendously. And that has driven me to want to give back, to take the opportunity to influence and mentor and help others, you know, reach their personal goals the way that the Ohio Air National Guard has helped me reach mine.
Okay. And what about the military path? Were you always an officer? Did you?
No, to your question, I actually started out, I enlisted in the 178th Security Forces Squadron in 1995, went to basic training in 96, served in Security Forces, enlisted from 96 to 2003. January of 2003, attended Academy of Military Science and was commissioned out of there, returning to the 178th Security Forces Squadron as the operations officer. Did that for a couple of years militarily. I was also during that time for about a year and a half, the Mission Support Group Executive Officer here. And then from there, I was selected for pilot training and left the base in early August of 2005 through undergraduate pilot training at Vance Air Force Base in Oklahoma. From there, I returned, actually went to the 121st Air Refueling Wing as a KC-135 pilot. I was with the 121st for several years. I worked both militarily as a KC-135 pilot, ultimately aircraft commander. I was also there kind of based on my security forces experience. Got here at the 178th. I ended up being the anti-terrorism officer there on the full-time side for several years. In 2011, I took an NGB staff tour in what's called NGB J-35, which is specifically the Future Operations Division of the Domestic Operations Directorate. That was a pretty interesting assignment there. Main focus was coordinating National Guard support to national special security events, so things like the NATO summit or G-12 summit that occurred in 2012, the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Conventions that happened that year, and then culminating with the 2013 presidential inauguration. So there's a lot of National Guard support in each of those events. And so NGB J-35 coordinated that across states and with federal partners, both within DOD and external agencies like FBI, FEMA, and so on. And then when a natural disaster hit, we would all stop what we're doing on that deliberate side, and we would move into basically crisis support. We would coordinate interstate support for domestic operations. So big ones that year were Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Isaac in 2012. So coordinating what did New York need or what did Louisiana need to effectively respond within their state. And we would take those requirements they would send. We'd reach out to other states, pull their capabilities and who was available, and then set it up so that between each state's J-3 or our operations, Joint Operations Directorate, they could execute emergency management assistance compact agreements to flow those forces into the states. So that was one of my, I think, most rewarding assignments in the Air Guard. Great one there. Stayed with NGB through 2013. I had an opportunity to attend the Army's Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. So I was there from 2013 to 2014, and I came back to the 121st as a chief of wing plans, kind of overseeing their nuclear operations mission, nuclear deterrence mission. Then 2019, I was moved into the command role, took command of the 121st Operations Support Squadron. Absolutely wonderful organization, great people. And that set me up to kind of get me where I'm at today with, having taken command of the 178th Intelligence Surveillance Reconnaissance Group in May of this year.
Wow. That is a impressive and varied career that you've had. I'm curious now, a lot of what we focus on here is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested to know a little more about your time at NGB and how it shaped your views on leadership during a crisis.
That's interesting. There's probably two distinct influences that NGB and that time had on my leadership philosophy and just general relationships, even on a bigger picture. You know, there are competing priorities in any situation. You know, whether you're at the operational level, you know, if you're in a squadron or if you're out on state active duty or, you know, your boots on the ground out there, what you see and what you need are often completely, and I don't want to say misidentified, that's not the way to say it, but how people perceive things and what they think is important is completely different, you know, when you're looking at it from a staff perspective. And so the ability, the capability to marry those different perceptions up and get to that common understanding, the ability to communicate and coordinate and build that shared vision of what success looks like from both that boots on the ground perspective and from that supporting entity perspective, making those meet up to achieve effective results. That's probably one of the biggest lessons I took away from there. And I can't understate enough the importance of positioning yourself and carrying yourself out as, you know, a trusted agent of your organization. Building trust is critically important to leadership. It's probably one of the most important aspects of it, among many others. But if you don't have that trust and you can't come off as a trusted agent, a trusted representative of that organization, it damages that ability to get to that shared vision, that shared understanding. And that's probably one of the biggest takeaways, I think, from the NGB time, both on that deliberate action planning and also the crisis action planning from the natural disaster response.
You're now the commander of the ISRG. When did you take command, and what has your experience been like up to this point?
Sure. I took command officially May 1st of this year, 2022. We did a change, or rather an assumption of command ceremony on Sunday of drill, so that would have been May 15th of 2022. What I have noticed most is the true professionalism and the amazing caliber of people that make up the ISRG. They are a highly motivated, tremendously capable, initiative-taking group of people. They are exceptionally talented. As I mentioned earlier, they meet our mission partners' needs very well. You know, I've been out making connections and inroads with the mission partners that the four squadrons and ISRG support, met several entities out there, many more to meet yet, but the common theme is just the extremely positive feedback we get back on the job they do, the caliber of people there, and their capabilities. That's been really, really great to see. It is truly an airman-driven organization. The airmen in ISRG, when they see an opportunity or see a challenge, they get after it. They don't wait for somebody to say, hey, go do this, or here's how we think you should do this. They spot the problem and they get after it. And that's absolutely fantastic. I think the group has an extremely exciting future ahead of it, and it's all driven by the people in it.
All right. Well, while we're on that topic, would you tell me a little bit more about the future of the ISRG as you see it? What are your plans for the group?
Sure. We're in a kind of a mission change point right now. The last couple of years, the group has looked strongly at pivoting towards the Space National Guard, should there be one. That continues to be debated at, you know, echelons well above us, you know, at the national level. We'll continue to watch that with keen interest as it, you know, the future of a Space National Guard is debated in Congress and whether or not that becomes a reality. I will say that the Air Force is looking at expanded cyber capabilities as a requirement now. You may or may not know the 179th Airlift Wing is on the early stages of a mission change to be a cyber wing and getting into the information warfare domain. And there's going to be a tremendous opportunity for support needed to make that mission work outside of the 179th. And I think that the 178th Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance Group is uniquely situated to be able to provide that capability, or those capabilities rather, quickly. I will say that, you know, from a state perspective, you know, our Adjutant General, his priorities for new missions have long been space and cyber domains. And so both the possibilities of the future of what the ISRG might do are right in line with that. Again, I think we're at a big inflection point. A lot of it we have to kind of wait and see, as much as I hate to say that, to see what the direction will be. But regardless of whether it's a space or a cyber focus, there are two great paths in front of the group. So I think there's a lot of great mission potential on either of those paths in the coming years.
Okay, would you go ahead and tell me a little bit about what are some of the benefits of those mission changes?
Sure. So right now, our existing linkages, we're not set up to be utilized in a traditional manner that you would expect of the Air National Guard. We're not aligned such that we would deploy in a forward environment in a surge capability to provide that strategic reserve or even that operational reserve support. And these paths would enable us to be utilized and to be organized and employed in more of that traditional Guard model. So that's definitely a benefit there. On the cyber side, should we go that way? I really do think that the capability of supporting that mission set within the state is going to yield a lot of synergies that would not be there if that mission was sent to another state. Good, for example, you know, us supporting Mansfield, we're only about 2 hours away. So that makes potential for force development moves, for career progression, career broadening, makes a lot of options available for that. So there's a benefit there. On the space side, it's the ultimate high ground. So to be involved with that, you know, you're going to be involved with where our nation's, you know, on the forefront of our nation's defense for probably centuries to come. So again, both of these avenues have a lot of advantages, a lot of benefits, and long-term gains for the organization, and not just the group, but for the wing as well.
That's really exciting to think about.
Indeed. Indeed it is.
So what are some of the hurdles or the challenges between where we are and where we want to be?
On the space line of effort, if we go that way, I think I alluded to it earlier, but it's playing out on the national level, and we are spectators to this, is whether or not there will be a Space National Guard. If there is a Space National Guard, I think one of our organizations, one of our squadrons, the 126th, is likely to be one of the first Air Guard units to transition to the Space Force. If not, then we have the challenges of what does the 126th do, and how do we transition them to a new mission? That's a giant challenge facing us right now. Also, on the space side, that space line of effort or space future, the remaining organizations in the squadron, if we stay on a space track, it'll be a while before those squadrons would be able to truly become part of the Space Force. The Space Force is not projected to grow for several years. So that presents a challenge of what do we engage on, and how do we maintain relevancy, you know, in that near term. Challenges on the cyber line of effort, if we go there, is that it is the cyber mission that is being stood up is new, and the Air Force doesn't really know exactly yet what all it entails and what it needs to look like and how it will operate. I've heard the analogy with some people saying, hey, we're running with scissors. We've been told to run with scissors on this because it's a critical need. So as we look at how the group will fit into that mission, there's just a lot of unknowns. So it's hard to say, hey, this is exactly how, say, the 124th or the 125th or the 127th might be able to support that mission. Another analogy, it's essentially building the airplane as you're flying it, trying to figure out what's right, what do we need as we're putting the organization together. And so that creates a significant challenge.
Sounds like that requires a lot of adaptability and flexibility.
Absolutely. It also requires a good deal of initiative, creative thought, critical thinking especially. You know, both of these missions are paradigm shifting. And I think the ISRG and the people in it are uniquely capable and suited to do this, but it's going to require dramatic shift in thought and how we organize, train, equip, and prepare to execute these missions. And I think that group is well suited to do that.
You've said you were impressed by several of the airmen that you've had in the ISRG. Could you share some stories about some of those airmen and the things that they've done to impress you?
Sure. I've had the opportunity to start visiting several mission partners, interact with mission partners both on the active duty side at National Guard Bureau, and I've had the opportunity to get a lot of positive feedback already, either directly or indirectly with stories being recounted to me. We visited Wright-Patterson a couple weeks ago, the 73rd Intelligence Squadron there. Technical Sergeant Caulfield is there, is doing a fantastic job. Really, we got remarkable feedback and a lot of great kudos from the 73rd leadership on the job that Sergeant Caulfield is doing for them now. And he's not the first person from our organization to fill that role. Back here closer to home, National Guard Bureau has been doing a series of exercises intended to integrate space operations and space intelligence support called the Vulcan Guard Series. And we've had two of those now. We've gotten excellent feedback from really everyone in the group who has contributed to those exercises. But notably, Master Sergeant Bennett and Technical Sergeant Johnson were singled out for their efforts and their contributions in the early exercises in that series. People like Master Sergeant Leach, he's been a stalwart of the 125th for a long time. He's the kind of like the go-to expert for when the organization is asked to support research and development opportunities with potential new technologies coming out to assist in how the group conducts its missions. Technical Sergeant Gray in the 124th has done a phenomenal job, and we've gotten great feedback with him providing current and future mission briefings to visiting dignitaries, GOs even. A lot of great feedback there. So there's truly a lot of great people across the organization, and really everywhere I go, and every time I talk with a new mission partner and make that introduction, shortly after the, hi, my name is, and I'm from the 178th Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance Group, I get feedback saying, your people are doing a fantastic job. We'd really like to have more of them here.
So in your opinion, what defines a good leader?
A good leader is someone who, as I said earlier, building trust is very important, but somebody that creates the conditions to build and maintain trust, both at the individual and the organizational level. Somebody who can set the standard, somebody who embodies the thought that anything worth doing is worth doing right. It's conducting yourself above reproach and upholding accountability both up, down, and across. It's recognizing that all people are valuable, but all are different, and that's a good thing. It's understanding that no one approach is going to work for everyone, but everyone must feel valued and must see themselves as contributing members of the team. Leadership is creating a shared vision of the future and how that organization wants to be and where they want to go. And it's about creating buy-in across the organization to reach that shared vision. It's motivating, enabling, and empowering people to move the organization forward and setting the conditions to create a resilient learning organization capable of negotiating challenges and strife that organizations and individuals face throughout time. It's about taking those organizational wins, those little victories that moving towards that shared vision that the organization experiences and internalizing them and incorporating them into the organization's culture so that that organization becomes and continues to be a self-perpetuating, forward-moving organization that supports its members.
So we've talked a little bit about the airmen in the ISRG that are excelling and doing amazing things. We've talked a little bit about your definition of good leadership. What are the characteristics that you hope to see or that you look for in your airmen?
Good question. Creativity is a great one, especially with where we're at. With mission changes on the future, a lot of how we've done things in the past are not going to be how we do them in the future. So thinking creatively, leveraging new ways of approaching the challenges and the problem sets that we're tasked to get after, that's going to be a key aspect of what we look for in airmen in the near future. It's maintaining the community and the sense of family within the organization. We are the Air National Guard. We are a community-based organization. So maintaining those ties and that camaraderie, that connectedness and inclusivity within the group and within, not just within the group itself, but from the group out and across the rest of the wing and even farther beyond the fence line into our communities, maintaining that connection and that connectedness.
What book has had the biggest impact on your life?
Oh, wow. That is a challenging question. There are so many books that have had quite an impact. Probably the most recently read that kind of got me thinking quite in depth is Enduring Courage. It's a biography of Eddie Rickenbacker and the challenges that he faced. A lot of people don't know him. He's the epitome of the self-made individual. You know, grew up the son of working class immigrants who did not speak the local language very well. You know, ended up dropping out of school essentially after just a few grades of primary school to take care of his family after his father was initially injured in a workplace accident and later passed from that. But getting himself all the way through where we see him at the pinnacle of his life, the later years of his life, where he's the ace of aces in World War I. He is a successful airline founder and owner, and just the getting himself from those very austere beginnings to the by any measure a truly successful, empowered individual, and that transformation that he guided himself through that time frame. I think that pretty much any of us out there can take life lessons from him and from his situation. So I highly recommend that book.
What's your war story?
Sorry, what's my war story?
Yes. So what I mean by a war story is not necessarily a time that you were, like boots on ground, putting mm-hmm. rounds downrange, like literal war story, but more of what is a time when everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and how did you overcome what you were facing?
It's a very interesting question. I can think of actual combat zone examples. I can think of more home-based type locations as well. I think an interesting story, getting back to that National Guard experience, that National Guard year that we were talking about earlier. I was there in 2011, 2012, 2013. It was a very interesting time to be in the National Capital Region. Sequestration was impacting the military significantly at that time. We saw a good deal of, I don't want to say like infighting, but maneuvering for mission and relevancy among each of the services. And going into the 2013 presidential inauguration, the National Guard support for that, which has been a kind of a well-established requirement or level of requirements of what typical military support looks like, we were in a situation where those notions were significantly upended, and what would have been traditional National Guard missions were at great risk of being tasked out to other services and specifically the active component. And that came down to, I said earlier about building trust and trust in relationships. That's one where being an honest broker or that trusted agent of your organization really pays dividends. But we got down to the brass tacks of what National Guard support that was going to look like based off of a conversation between a representative of the Office of Secretary of Defense and a representative of the J35, talking in a parking garage about, hey, where are we going to meet in the middle? What does the middle actually look like? And navigating a significant impasse where National Guard equities would probably not have been as involved as they were without being able to be that honest broker and have that legitimate discussion. So that's one that always sticks with me, where you think of these big machinations of military operations moving, but at the end of the day, you can kind of trace it back to where it's two people in a room talking, and that's how the ball gets rolling. So again, the trust in those relationships are hugely important, and when you have that, you can reach mutually beneficial outcomes far easier and far quicker. With that type of a relationship.
Tell me about a time when you failed, and how did you bounce back from that failure?
Oh, I've had a great one. So initially, and it kind of ties in here, I was initially hired to be an F-16 pilot. And going through UPT, I had a few challenges. I notably struggled with formation initially, definitely a late bloomer there. As the undergraduate pilot training was closing out, I was not recommended for fighters. And so I had to find a new home. You know, ultimately, that's what led to me going to the 121st. And for a period of time after that, you know, being a fighter pilot specifically was a huge goal of mine. And that was probably the first true experience that I got into where I did not make a goal. I did not achieve that goal. And it took a little bit of time after that, but that was an amazing opportunity for self-reflection and soul-searching. And we were talking about earlier about readjusting goals. And what time has told me, and you know, after I readjust and say, hey, all right, there's going to be benefit to this. We'll figure it out. You know, I ended up having a remarkable, amazing career with a lot of opportunities. Flying the KC-135, that gave me the opportunity to go around the world and see things and do things that I would never have done in the fighter community. But learning from that hey, you can have a significant failure and recover from it and really get to a point where like, hey, that actually really wasn't a failure at all. That opened up so many more doors and so many other different opportunities that weren't there before. And the chance to set those new goals and to get after that new direction. You know, that failure that we talked about there, you know, the failure of meeting that goal and a major life goal really taught me that, hey, you know, you can fail, you can learn, you can pick yourself back up and you can go. And so that right there, I think is probably... So that's the first big time that did not meet a major life goal that I set for myself. And again, great opportunity to learn. I'm actually very thankful that it worked out that way. In a roundabout way, it's probably what's led me right back here to this room talking to you today and being part of the fine organization that is the 178th Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance Group.
That's a great story. I just love to ask that question because we're so... Type A personalities sure. around here, and everyone is so driven and focused, and you know, we all talk about our successes, but nobody ever talks about our failures, and I think it's super important to talk about those too.
Absolutely. There's a lot to learn from those, both, you know, about your situation, about resilience and how naturally resilient people tend to be. A lot of times they underestimate their own resilience.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, sir. We really enjoyed having you on the show today.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
That concludes today's episode of Beyond the Horizon. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe and leave us a rating and review. If you're looking for more ways to connect with the 178th Wing, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also write to us at beyondthehorizonpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep your eyes on the horizon.